Hello and thanks for listening. Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring discussions and research papers related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a Yorkrite Mason and Knight Templar. So first, some news. We have over 3,000 downloads since the show began, so we're spreading the word, which is awesome. Also, I'm working on a Whence Came You merchandise shop. We didn't want to just ask for donations to keep the lights on, so we asked ourselves what we could do. We came up with this merchandise shop and basically put the show's logo on some t-shirts and coffee mugs, and some iPad and iPhone covers. Just a few things you can buy, and a small portion of the cost comes back to the show. So it's kind of like you donated the show, but you got something like a t-shirt to show for it. So look for that in the next few weeks. It should be pretty nice. Links to it will be on the website as usual. This week, while we're waiting for the next issue of Knight Templar to come out, I thought we might shed some light on a group that was so public at times that even the Flintstones used to make fun of it. If you're old enough, I'm sure you remember the Loyal Order of Water Buffaloes, and also the Order of Dinosaurs, which actually resembled the Knights Templar a bit. But here, we will focus on the ancient Egyptian Arabic Order Nobles Mystic Shrine, or the Shriners. So here is the history according to the ShrinerInternational.org website. In 1870, a group of Masons gathered frequently for lunch at the Knickerbocker Cottage on 6th Avenue in New York City. At a special table on the second floor, a particularly fun-loving group of men met regularly. Among these regulars were Walter M. Fleming, M.D., and William J. Billy Florence, an actor. The group frequently talked about starting a new fraternity for Masons, one centered on fun and fellowship, more than ritual. Fleming and Florence took the idea seriously enough to do something about it. Billy Florence had been on tour in France and had been invited to a party given by Arabian diplomat. The exotic style, flavors, and music of the Arabian-themed party inspired him to suggest this as the theme for the new fraternity. Walter Fleming, a devoted fraternity brother, built on Fleming's ideas and used his knowledge of fraternal ritual to transform the Arabian theme into the ancient Arabic order of the Nobles of the Mystic Shrine, or AAONMS. With the help of the Knickerbocker Cottage regulars, Fleming drafted the ritual, designed the emblem and costumes, formulated a salutation, and declared that members would wear the red fez. The first meeting of Mecca Shriners, the first temple chapter established in the United States, was held September 26, 1872. So we'll learn a little bit more about the shrine next week. And this week's paper is another from the California Freemason, entitled From Badge to Symbol. Freemasons are easily identified in the public mind with the square and compass, with the letter G in the center. Not only does it appear on many of our buildings, but Masons wear it proudly on coats and jackets, as well as on rings. Even in films such as National Treasure, make use of the square and compass as a brand, identifying us in the public eye as Freemasons. Freemasons, however, have many such symbols, and nowhere in our ritual is there a statement that the square and compass is our primary symbol. Indeed, it is not our primary symbol, regardless of its widespread public use. The primary badge identifying a Mason is the white lambskin apron. At the very beginning of his Masonic journey, we tell the entered apprentice the lamb, or white-skin apron, is an emblem of innocence and the badge of a Mason. One emblem, many meanings. Many Masons wear name badges, badges that identify them as members of a particular lodge, or as holders of a particular office in Masonry. These badges proclaim to others that we are a part of something larger than ourselves, and that we have been entrusted with something more important than just a simple membership. But such badges have little to do with the true badge of a Mason. The true badge, we are told, is also an emblem of innocence. When presented with a lambskin apron, we are told for the first time that it has an inner as well as an outer meaning. Like the name badge, the lambskin apron identifies us to the world at large as Masons. But it carries a meaning far deeper than that of a mere badge, and that is the meaning of the term emblem. An emblem goes beyond a badge and enters into the world of symbolism. The white lambskin apron is therefore both badge for others to know us as Masons and a symbol of something much deeper, something that turns our thoughts inward rather than outward. It reminds us of what we are engaged in, a great enterprise, which has far more meaning to each of us as individuals than it can ever have for the world at large. The lambskin apron is an outward and visible symbol of an inward and spiritual grace. Signs of God. The use of such symbols to turn our thoughts toward God and our own spiritual values is very old. Carvings in stone at Tell el-Amarna in Egypt show a solar disk with hands extended in blessing. The purpose was to show that what the Egyptians perceived as the source of all life, the sun, was also the source of continual good things to men and women on earth. But this emblem was much more than just a reminder of the solar energy that makes all life possible. It was also the symbol of God, one of the first representations of a monotheistic God in history. In similar fashion, the lambskin apron is a symbol of the blessings of God that we seek in our own work as masons. Shortly after the entered apprentice is presented with his very own white lambskin apron, he is taught an important lesson about Masonic progress toward perfection. Later in the evening, he is told that two important symbols for a mason, taken from our stonemason ancestors, are the rough ashlar and the perfect ashlar. An ashlar is a rectangular block of hewn stone. Stonemasons use rectangular blocks of stone in building a wall because the stability that they lend to the finished structure is perfect. Each row of a rectangular block of stone is placed so that each stone overlaps the one below it, keeping the blocks tightly fitted against one another. The rough ashlar is at the beginning of the process of building the wall. The perfect ashlar is at the end product. A stone made so smooth on all sides that the cement uniting the blocks will adhere uniformly to the surfaces and provide a lasting bond. The perfect ashlar is not an emblem of absolute perfection in some abstract sense, but is as perfect as the stonemason can make it for the purpose intended. The perfect ashlar is a symbol of making our lives fit into that spiritual building which masons are building, lives that are useful for creating a stable and lasting structure for the benefit of humanity. Lessons on looking inward. Both the white-skinned lamb apron and the perfect ashlar are often misunderstood by those who do not truly understand Freemasonry. Neither the apron nor the ashlar implies that a mason will become a perfect man, free of all defects and untouched by sin. The concept of perfection amongst Mason is not a theological concept. Freemasonry makes no statement about religion and makes no promises that by wearing the lambskin apron or shaping his life into the perfect ashlar, he will thereby gain admission into heaven. Those concepts are the province of religion and not Freemasonry. We use these symbols instead as a way of explaining that our lives here on earth must be truly useful to God and to know our fellow humans, if they are to have value in this earthly life. If we allow our white lambskin apron to become soiled and dirty because of the way in which we live our lives, others will notice. If we leave our rough-hewn ashlar in the state for a lifetime, our work will be of little value in the building of stable and useful society. These symbols of Freemasonry encourage us to take a look at what we are doing with our lives and to work to improve our contributions to the building of that house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Freemasonry teaches it by a symbol and by allegory. As important as the square and compasses are to us as Masons, they are not our primary symbols. The white lambskin apron is. It teaches us that the world will notice what we do with our lives, and that our efforts to preserve unsullied this primary emblem of Mason are also tied to the usefulness of what we do as Masons. It is only at the end of our life that we will truly understand why we are told that it is more honorable than the star and garter, or any other distinction that can be conferred. If worthy worn, it is most certainly an emblem of innocence and the badge of a Mason. But it is more. Above all our symbols, it is the only one that we can continually wear with honor to the fraternity, as well as the pleasure to ourselves. So this week's paper is not on the podcast app, but I will tell you that it is available free of charge through the California Freemason iPod iPad app. So we'll close it up this week with the famous Freemason, Harry Houdini. Now for some Masonic information, Harry Houdini was initiated in St. Cecil Lodge, number 568, New York, July 17th, 1923, passed July 31st, and raised August 21st. In 1924, he entered the consistory. Houdini gave back to the Masonic fraternity of which he was so proud, including giving a benefit performance for the Valley of New York, which filled the 4,000-seat Scottish Rite Cathedral and raised thousands of dollars. In October of 1926, just weeks prior to his untimely death on that Halloween, he became a Shriner in Mecca Temple. In truth, There were two Houdinis. Harry Houdini, the performer, as the world saw him, and Brother Eric Weiss, the man and Freemason, a personality obscured from view by the public persona. His successes allowed him to be amazingly generous and thoughtful of retired or destitute magicians or their families, often paying their rent or otherwise extending aid. He also gave benefit performances at charity hospitals and orphanages. His generosity, while often kept in the shadows, was legion. Possibly he felt he too would someday be in need. Possibly he was simply implementing the Masonic tenets of brotherly love, charity, or perhaps it was a bit of both. On October 22, 1926, during an engagement at the Princess Theater in Montreal, a first-year college student asked permission to test the entertainer's abdominal muscle control and strike the magician. This was often part of his act, so Houdini accepted the challenge and mumbled his assent. But the student struck before Houdini could tense the necessary muscles, obviously a critical requirement. Houdini ignored later stomach pains in the tradition of the show must go on. Arriving in Detroit the next day, he was diagnosed with acute appendicitis, but again insisting on performing. Finally, with a temperature of 104, he was taken to Grace Hospital, where a ruptured gangrenous appendix was removed, but peritonitis had unfortunately set in. Despite medical predictions of imminent death, his strong will to live was such that he held on almost a week. On the afternoon of October 31st, 1926, Halloween Day, at the age of 52, he finally succumbed. Halloween was perhaps a symbolically magical date for his final curtain. Last rites for Brother Houdini were held on November 4th, 1926, at the Elks Clubhouse in New York with some 2,000 people in attendance. Services were conducted by Rabbi Tinter, who joined the Elks Hour of Remembrance. A tribute was delivered by Rabbi Bernard Drachman, and eulogies by Loni Haskell of the Jewish Theatrical Guild and Henry Chesterfield of the National Vaudeville Artists, a broken wand ceremony by the Society of American Magicians, and concluded with rites by Mount Zion Congregation and the Elks, and Masonic rites by St. Cecil Lodge, number 568. Burial was then in Machpelah Cemetery, Brooklyn, a site Houdini had personally selected. That's it for this week. I hope you had a good listen. Remember to check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Whence Came You. Smartphone apps for the show are available, and links to those and much more can be found on the website, wcypodcast.blogspot.com. Also, you can add us to your circle on Google+ at the email address, wcypodcast@gmail.com. Until next week, be safe, and for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.